Live and in color from the NBC News Radio Broadcasting Studios of KCAA, 1050 AM, 102.3 FM, and 106.5 FM, located in beautiful Southern California, and in parallel from the Turfs Up Radio Studio in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Thanks for tuning in to the Water Zone Show this evening.
Welcome to the Water Zone tonight, and hope everybody's having a great time. It's a beautiful day out here in Phoenix, Arizona, and I'm going to also welcome and turn it over to my prestigious co-host, Mr. Chris Davies, out in California.
It's lovely out here too, Rob. I tell you, just another beautiful day here. It was a bit breezy today. For those who are not local to Southern California, we had what are known as the Santa Ana winds. Rob, we had some gusts 40 to 45 miles an hour today consistent, and a couple of them at 70. There was a gust clocked at 81 miles per hour in Riverside today, so much so that the lights at work went out. We were out of power for a good couple hours this morning.
Oh, I think it's coming this way because it started getting windy about 3 o'clock here and starting to pick up, so I think you're sending it my way. Thanks a lot.
Everything goes west to east, buddy, weather-wise.
Yeah. So there's a lot of other things, but I won't get into politics today. Anyway, joining us on the show, as usual, is our wonderful purveyor of Maven's Notebook, Ms. Chris Austin. Chris, welcome today.
Hey, how you doing, everybody?
Great.
We're good.
Yeah, good. Can't complain. Beautiful weather here in sunny Southern California. Very breezy, yes, we felt the winds, but, you know, at least I'm feeling for the people in the middle of the country, you know, that Texas and the other places that are having some real issues. And while they got the power connected, they haven't got the plumbing done, and I think it's going to be quite a while before a lot of places in those areas can get plumbing. So if you're a plumber, head to Texas. I'm serious here. You know, Texas has put out the call. We need some help because pipes burst all over and at all levels. So, you know, if you're a plumber and you can get to Texas, you know, good for you, but I feel for the people in Texas, and I hope you're all going to get through this, you know, if there's anyone listening here tonight. So.
Stock up down the 10 freeways.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and it's interesting, you know, we here in California shouldn't feel entirely smug because we have some vulnerabilities in our utility systems, you know, especially with regards to earthquakes and stuff. So, you know, while we may do okay in a cold blast, you know, and in other types of instances, not so much. So, you know, it's just, you always got to be prepared, I guess.
Yeah. And we do have energy crisis with electricity and things. So, yeah, everybody has their own little issues that they got to deal with all over the country. So, but, again, we wish them hopefully back to normal in the next couple of days. And, hope everybody's feeling sorry. I know there was some deaths due to that. Sorry to hear that. Unfortunately, you know, that's what happens. But we want the best and give our wishes to all the people out there. Anyway, at the end of our last show, Chris, Austin, if you remember, we're going to talk about, I thought that was something that was interesting about, and I'm trying to remember the exact term, of manufactured water.
Well, actually, the term is produced water.
Produced water. Okay.
Produced water. And, you know, it was really interesting, you know, many, many years ago when my husband, you know, with the two kids in tow, would go out exploring strange and oddly not traveled places in California, and we would be out in the Kern County area, especially the western side of Kern County, where there's a lot of oil and gas production. And I remember coming across this tank that just, it was labeled produced water out here in the middle of nowhere, you know, next to a natural gas well, I didn't understand, or an oil well, but they had this produced water. And apparently, when you drill for oil or for natural gas, you're going to encounter parts of the ground underneath that have water. And so water comes up as much as does oil. And so dealing, you know, you wouldn't know this, really, perhaps, but Kern County is one of the highest producing oil counties in the United States. I mean, it makes a big contribution to the amount of oil that we produce here in our country. And you wouldn't know that. It's not necessarily well publicized, but the people in Kern County sure know it. And they have been using this produced water, the water that comes up when it drills for oil, they've been using it for irrigation. And there's been a lot of concern about that. Because people are concerned that if you're fracking or you're adding stuff, you know, to get the oil up, is that coming out in the water and is that affecting the crops? And while you may, you know, the layperson may crinkle up their nose at this and say, oh, well, there's got to be something wrong with that, they have had study after study after study that says that this water is fine to use for agricultural irrigation. But it's one of those things where, you know, science may not always agree with what you might think. And you might think, oh, well, you know, that comes up with the oil, it's polluted or whatever. But they haven't had a study that has shown that by, you know, using this water on the crops, that any chemical got transferred into the, you know, into the produce that was produced from that. So it's, you know, sometimes science, you know, doesn't give you the answer that you would expect, I guess, yep. Is the, you know. And there are plenty examples, so there are just sometimes, I think, when you just have to, you know, you just have to trust the science. They've studied this particular issue so many times, you know.
I think people are getting different signals. For example, you know, a couple of years ago, if you remember in Orange County, when they made a term up called toilet to tap. And where they recycled the water and purified it, and they had people come to the plants there and the water treatment plants, and you know the general manager was standing with a glass of the water and drink it, and people were, you know, shocked that, you know, he's going to get sick and die and all that. But you know, you think about the astronauts who go up in space, you know, they recycle water, and I won't go into how they do that, but they do, and I just think it's more of a maybe it's from a culture or they just don't have the full understanding. It's like going to foreign countries and you see they eat strange animals that people here in the United States would say, oh, God, you can't do that. But to them, it's a normal thing. And, you know, it's just something that's new and they have to understand it. Just like they're talking about COVID-19 vaccine. You know, oh, yeah, it's good, but nobody can tell me how long it's going to last. It's, you know, if I take this, do I need another shot next year? Or what's going to happen in 3 years? Am I going to get this big ball coming out of the middle of my nose? You know. It's because people don't know, you know, and that's the thing. When they don't understand it or don't really know all the answers, they freak out about stuff like that. And like you say, they've done tests, you know, and you know, if you watch TV, everybody says, well, trust the scientists. Okay, well, you have some that say it does this, and you have some that say it does something else. So, you know, I don't have the answer to that, but I think the science and the technology is here, that they can transform that kind of water, or, you know, extracting it and producing it in a different way so it comes out nice and clean for ag use. I think that's a great thing to do.
Well, and you know, I'm going to tell you a big secret here, so shh, don't tell anybody else. But, okay. You know, when they clean up your drinking water, they are not cleaning up your drinking water to take everything, every foreign substance out of it and to deliver pure and clean water to your tap. They are cleaning it up to meet drinking water standards, which means that there's an acceptance that you're going to have, there's a little bit of something in all the water. And you can't, you know, while we have great wastewater treatment plants and they can do a lot, they can't take absolutely everything out of the water. And so, yeah, and you can have a home filtration system, and hopefully that's cleaning it up, you know, even more. And full disclosure here, we have one here. We have a under-the-sink water thing. We bought it 10 years ago. We changed the filters, you know, regularly, and yep. We have great water. But, you know, no drinking water source, and I would even might even go to say that even if you buy bottled water, you can't you cannot be assured that there is absolutely nothing in that water but just water. It's just no. not
well, sometimes
the way
they have
the system works.
Sometimes they have to add additives to the water to make it, you know, make it to meet the drinking, just like they started, they wanted to put fluoride in years ago in some states and things of that. People argued, we don't want the fluoride in the water, and you know, it goes on and on and on. I mean, it happens all the time.
Well, the interesting thing is, you know, the Colorado River, it travels seven states from the headwaters in Colorado all the way out to the Imperial Valley, and there's a lot of agricultural systems that are there on the river that are taking the water out, running across their fields, and dumping the tailwater into the Colorado River. So by the time that water reaches the Imperial Dam, which is the last diversion by the, you know, and the rest of the water goes to Mexico, the water is so salty that it barely meets it doesn't meet drinking water standards. And at the Imperial Dam in Yuma, which is where they divert the water, they actually have anodes dropped in the water before the big steel gates, because if they don't, the salt will degrade the gates. And these are expensive gates to replace and very difficult to do so. And the truth is that even Metropolitan, who gets their water a few diversions up the Colorado River at the bottom of Lake Havasu, they actually blend Colorado River water with Delta water so that it can take the salt and the other things that are in it down to drinking water levels. Again, you know, it's not your water agency is not delivering pure water to your tap. They're delivering you water that meets drinking water standards, which allows for the fact that there's just some stuff in water that we're all going to get to drink. You know, that's the sad thing. I don't want to freak anybody out on their water supply, you know, but the truth is that, you know, all the water sources, unless you're getting it directly from God, are going to have, you know, something in it. Hopefully, and the idea is it's at a low enough level, it's not going to harm you. But, you know.
I mean, even the people that have the rain catchments, you know, there's stuff that comes that's in the atmosphere that causes issues. Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, yeah, the water comes through the air, and if you're here in Southern California, that's not necessarily clean. And okay. If we get a really, you know, not very big rainfall, what does it do? It makes a mess out of your car. That's mm-hmm. what it does. You know, so it's like, yeah, you know, back in the day when I was young, we used to go out and catch snowflakes on our tongues, but I'm not sure you can really do that anywhere. You know, not to be totally depressing, but, you know, there's this issue of microplastics. You know, all these plastics that we use through all aspects of our life, including, you know, you have tires, and you wear those tires down on your car, and your tread goes down, and what do you think happens to, you know, all that rubber that was on your tire? Well, it gets shed into the environment, and it ends up in your waterways. And it's a big issue in the San Francisco Bay, as you can imagine, because they have a lot of traffic that's going around this body of water, and they have really found that little shreds from tires are, you know, making their way into the environment. And microplastics everywhere, they're precipitating out of the atmosphere into snow in the Colorado, in the high country of the Colorado. I mean, you just can't get, you know, past this stuff. So, you know, and boy, aren't I being cheery.
Yeah. Mr. Davey, well, you're coming.
Wait a minute. We need to find something fun to talk about. Let's change the subject.
That's what keeps the Brita and the Culligan people in business, Chris.
Yeah, hey. But you're a fisherman, right? Right, Chris?
All 8 days a week.
Well, you know, they're going to have Fishmas in the Eastern Sierra this year.
I've been reading that. You give it away on your blog.
Yeah, they canceled it last year due to COVID-19. But, you know, in the Eastern Sierra, they have a great fishery there, and they really depend on tourism. So, you know, they're looking forward to welcoming y'all back to come up there and fish in the beautiful Eastern Sierra. There are few places more spectacular, and it's only maybe one or two than the Eastern Sierra.
Chris, I couldn't agree with you more. For 50 plus years, I've been driving up and down the Owens Valley on 395, and there is no more beautiful a landscape or panoramic view. I don't think anywhere I've been on the globe. Anyway, it's just a gorgeous place.
And the greatest thing, you know, is the thing, you know, like, wouldn't you love to live in Lone Pine? I mean, is there no more beautiful small community than Lone Pine?
It is. Yeah.
You know, they have really, you know, because it's mostly owned by the Department of Water and Power in L.A., they haven't really developed that area. And it, you know, while we would all want to go live there, the fact that we can't is what keeps it as nice as it is.
That's absolutely right. For the 50 years I've been going there, it still today just looks like a one-horse town as you drive through it, the same as it was 50 years ago. It hasn't changed much at all. You're right. You're spot on, Chris.
Yeah. You don't see any, you know, S&S homes, you know, 500 home developments. It just doesn't happen there. But that's what makes it so charming. But, you know, since you've driven up and down that road, you know, that little cafe outside of Olancha, I think it was called the Ranch. Yeah, I read that LADWP is, you know, offering that property out for lease. So it sounds like that restaurant kind of went, you know, didn't make it through the pandemic, but that was a great little restaurant. I ate there a couple of times, you know.
And I've done it more than a couple of times myself, and it's a great spot. Olancha is another great town, right? Just a little bit. If you blink your eyes as you're driving on 395, you'll miss it, but a great little town.
Oh, boy. You know, and I sure do love the Eastern Sierra. I mean, it's so scenic. And I stayed in Bishop. I stayed in Independence at this little place called the Rays Den, I think it's called. You know, the guy named Ray/Den. And I stayed there with my kids in Independence, and they had their little scooters. They were very young. It was a long time ago, but they were riding their scooters up and down the residential streets, and it was dark, but, you know, I didn't have to worry about them. Wonderful, wonderful place. Y'all should go visit Eastern Sierra, Inyo County, Bishop, Lone Pine. It's really worth your drive. You know?
Yeah, and even if you're not a fisherman, just great scenic opportunities, wildlife opportunities. Just to sit quietly by a stream and just, you know, what kind of watch the world go by. Just an awesome place.
It is.
Yul Hauser used to do a lot of productions up there and talk about water and such and things. And speaking about water, our show's called The Water Zone. I was reading about Senator Melissa Hurtado, and she's introduced to the State Water Resiliency Act, legislation that could provide up to $785 million to restore the capacity of California's critical water delivery infrastructure. But then I noticed, tagged on to that was, and repair aging roads and bridges. So to me, that means $785 million isn't going to go for just the water, unfortunately.
Well, you know, last year, well, we have this problem with groundwater pumping in the San Joaquin Valley, which has caused a lot of subsidence, which is basically the ground dropping, lowering. And when you have irrigation canals, this is a really, really bad thing, because irrigation canals are sort of built on anticipated declines in the landscape, and the landscape is dropping, that those things are kind of changing. And that has affected major water delivery systems, not only the California Aqueduct, but the Bryant Kern Canal, which runs on the opposite side of the valley. And it's actually reduced the capacity significantly. I'm thinking at least 20%, but maybe up to 50% in some areas. So, you know, this is hard. It's a hard thing, because why has the canal sunk because of subsidence? Well, it's because of all the pumping of the groundwater by numerous farmers throughout the central or throughout the San Joaquin Valley. So it's hard to sort of pin it on one particular person or one particular group of people. So Senator Hurtado introduced this bill last year to help pay for for fixing this problem, and it was it didn't make it pass. So she did the legwork, and she sort of tried to figure out why it didn't pass. And so she has reimagined this legislation to now not only address money for the Bryant Kern Canal, but for other areas and other parts of the state that may be experiencing similar problems. So she's taken a broader outlook in order to get this bill passed. You know, to be honest, I think it's too hard to pin down who particularly is responsible for this, you know, for the subsidence that is causing the problems in the canal. And sometimes I think you have to maybe look at what is the best, you know, solution to this. Getting this canal fixed would certainly benefit a lot of people on the other, you know, on all sorts of sides of this that wouldn't have necessarily contributed to the problem. So, you know, we'll see how it goes.
We'll measure it as it goes along. Well, we're coming up against our commercial break. Chris, we appreciate thanks for finishing off on our conversation we had last week about the produced water. That was, to me, a very interesting topic, and this as well. So for our listeners, please go to bathinsnotebook.com, become a sponsor, become a subscriber. It's the best place to get updates on California water news, and It's always great to have you on the show, Chris. You make the show great. So you and both Chris. Without you guys, we wouldn't be as I don't even know what the right word to use here.
It would be the Rob show.
No, I don't want it to be the Rob show. That's not me. I want I try to align myself with smart people so I don't look stupid. So
okay. I'm with you there.
All right. So Chris, thank you very much, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Take care, Rob. Take care, Chris.
You too. Have a great week, Chris.
Good night,
everybody.
We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back with our featured guests. So everybody stick around.
This is 1050 AM KCAA Loma Linda and 106.5 FM Yucaipa.
Are you looking for a place to buy your landscape and gardening items? Come visit us at Site One Landscape Supply. We offer a large and quality selection of irrigation, landscape, and outdoor living products such as Toro's water-efficient precision nozzles. Site One Landscape Supply has over 30 locations right here in Southern California, and we are the largest national wholesale distributor of landscape supplies in the United States. Site One's knowledgeable and friendly staff is equipped to help you with all your landscape, irrigation, and outdoor living projects. Whether you're redoing your backyard into a drought-tolerant garden or creating a water-efficient landscape for your client, Site One has everything you need, including the latest in water-saving technologies, drought-tolerant plants for your yard, irrigation supplies, fertilizer and weed control products, landscape accessories, hardscape products, outdoor lighting, and much, much more. Visit SiteOne.com to find a store near you or stop by today. Site One, we are stronger together.
If you knew there was a pipe cement that works better than the one you're currently using, is better for you and the environment, and costs the same or less, would you buy it? Well, no-brainer, right? Weldon, the trusted leader in solvent cements for over 60 years, is pleased to introduce a new line of solvent cements that does all that. Introducing the Eco Series line of solvent cements for PVC piping systems. Not only does it work great and set fast, it also has 30% lower solvent emissions and less smelly fumes. A better workplace environment when you're installing pipes. But don't just take our word for it. EcoSeries products are the only solvent cements that are Green Seal certified for environmental innovation for effective performance, improved working conditions, and for use with potable water. Now available in a medium-bodied fast-setting blue formula, 905 Eco, and a regular-bodied fast-setting clear formula, 900 Eco. Pick up a can today from your local distributor and see, smell, and feel the difference, just like Joe Sweat, president of Sunrise Irrigation, did. He said, after using Weldon's 905 Eco, we immediately noticed the application was smooth and there was noticeably less odor than other blue solvent cements on the market. The guys love it. To learn more about Eco solvent cements from Weldon, visit the website at www.weldon.com or call the technical service hotline at 877-477-8327. That's 877-477-8327.
Right, everybody. Well, welcome.
Go ahead, Chris.
You know, just tough not being able to see each other and not knowing who's on first. So, just going to say, Rob, welcome back to everyone to the second half here of the Water Zone Radio Show. I'm your host, Chris Davey. I'm here with our very gracious founder of the Water Zone Radio Show. His name is Rob Starr. And Rob, I got to apologize for kind of making the first half of the second half. Kind of like a travel log commercial for the Eastern Sierra, but it's a great place to visit.
That's okay. Like I said, it's supposed to be a casual show, and it's hard when we're not sitting next to each other. We can look at our engineer through the glass and any of that. I mean, it's just a different world with this virtual stuff. And just so people know, before this show went on, Chris was doing a virtual birthday party with his brother-in-law.
It was fun.
So
I think I had a couple of virtual beers as well. I'm still waiting.
I hope they were good.
But,
Oh, but they're probably low in alcohol volume, so you didn't have to worry. But anyway, I want you to turn it over. I'll let you introduce our featured guest.
All right, great. Well, to our listeners, thanks very much for sticking with us, everyone, because we do have a very interesting second half segment here, a little bit of a sports focus, NFL particularly in this case, but with, of course, a little water feel to it, sports field approach, if you will. Our guest is a gentleman by the name of Andy Leedy. Andy works for the NFL. He's got a very, very interesting job with the Arizona Cardinals. Let me give you just a couple of bits of background for Andy Leedy before we bring him on. Over 25 years of experience, service in the sports field industry, 21 years of those with the NFL and 5 years with Major League Baseball, MLB. So his responsibilities is to take care of one of the premier playing surfaces in the NFL. That, of course, is the Arizona Cardinals playing surface, but his responsibilities don't stop there. He's also responsible for their training facility, the Dignity Health Training Facility, that has a couple of, I know, sand-based fields and a synthetic surface. I think Andy is chief and cook and bottle washer there, but he has a staff of 4 full-time people and at times 8 part-time seasonal facilities personnel. So welcome to the show, Andy. Are you on the line with us, I hope?
Yeah, I'm here. Hey, Rob. Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be
great.
Here.
Glad to have you on your show. So we've got kind of a packed question we ask almost every guest that comes on, but I think it's a particularly poignant for you. So
You're not going to ask them for tickets, are you?
No, not yet. That was your job later on. Don't remember the notes. So Andy, tell us, you know, kind of what course of events, what influences, chance or otherwise, brought you to this career? In other words, you know, how did this all start for you?
I'd say it started pretty young. I, you know, my first job I ever had, 13, 14 years old in the summertime, was knocking on doors asking if my neighbors needed their lawns mowed. So I think I've always had an appreciation for, you know, the finished product of taking care of yard, whether it be you know, your neighbor's yard, your yard, or the sports facility you're maintaining. So, you know, truly my entire life, just about every job I've ever had has been, you know, is centered around what I'm doing now. You know, I moved on from, you know, knocking on my neighbor's doors to mow lawns, to working for a landscape maintenance company, to, you know, getting an opportunity with the Arizona Cardinals. Early in my career as a part-time seasonal worker, and, you know, just really understood the privilege that I had, you know, getting that opportunity, and I learned to understand how special that was, and you know, let my work ethic and, you know, my love for what I do, you know, turn into where I'm at today.
It's got to be awesome walking out on that field, you know, without the crowd there, and you just stand there and go, it's all mine. Look what I did, and look what I maintained. I mean, that's got to be an awesome feeling.
It really is special. You know, not a day goes by where you don't really pinch yourself and say, this is unique, and this is a privilege to know what we do and how important it is, you know, for the livelihood of the players, for the, you know, for the fans out there at home as well. So we have a ritual that we do every game day, when we paint, we'll finish painting on a Saturday prior to a Sunday game. Me and a majority of the crew will go up to the 400 level and just take a look at the field. You know, just one, put a, you know, a different perspective on what we've been seeing for the last couple of days preparing the surface. But again, just to take a step back and say, listen, this is what we did, guys. This is what we accomplished. And again, it's special every single time.
Well, I'll tell you, there's nothing like the sweet smell of new mown grass, that's for sure. If you've been in the green industry any length of time, you've certainly learned to appreciate that. Is that right?
Absolutely. Nothing beats it.
So what type of field do they have at Cardinal Stadium? I mean, I see it on television. I see it if I go by the stadium, I drive by. But tell us a little about what goes on and what happens when there's no games happening. In between times, do they have sporting events or other, you know, like car racing or anything on that field, or concerts, and then they got to replace grass? How does that all work during the year?
Yeah, so, you know, obviously this is the COVID years, an exception to the rule, but what makes our field unique, for those of you not familiar with our surface, my field is 100% movable. So the field is on a 94,000 square foot tray where the field is retractable. So the entire playing surface lives outside the building when we're not playing on it. And then typically on a Friday, we'll bring it in for a Sunday game and then back out on a Monday. So what we're left with when we don't have grass events, whether they be football, bowl games, high school games, soccer games, whenever we don't have grass events, that surface inside of the building turns into, you know, convention center, you know, the motorcycles, the monster trucks, concerts. We utilize that space a lot more frequently than you would a field that isn't retractable, to where there's a cost associated with it and there's, you know, there's some sort of compromise you could potentially make with that surface underneath if you put a monster truck show on top of it and then try to turn around and have a game in a condensed week. So it gives us a lot of flexibility to utilize that surface underneath the field quite a bit. So to answer your question, we're really unique on with what we can do in there on grass events and non-grass events.
I know when I lived in California in Anaheim, I go see the Angels. They have, just like you, they do the monster trucks and the motorcycle things, but they tear the grass out, and then they get it from West Coast Turf to lure a whole new batch, and they start all over again with that. So that, yeah, is there many stadiums in the country that has that retractable system, or is that just so unique to you guys?
So we were unique in the NFL and North America up until this past year, where the Raiders had utilized the same system when they moved to Las Vegas. When they got their new stadium in Las Vegas, they used the same engineer and copied a good amount of what we're doing in Arizona.
So what's a routine day for you guys?
You know, there's not necessarily a routine day, although we do have, once we get into the season, once the team is scheduled practice on certain days, you know, we have our paint days on Monday, our equipment days and mowing days and mechanical work days, you know, when the team isn't on it. But typically on, for like a game week, when we're at home, we'll do any mechanical work, any aeration that we need to do early in the week, assuming we don't have a game that the week prior. And then we'll begin laying out the field and painting on a Thursday. Field comes in on a Friday afternoon. We'll continue painting through Saturday, play the game Sunday, and then get after it again. Pretty much the same the next week.
Wow. Hey, we have a caller on the line here. I see him calling. His name's Jeff. I guess he has a question for you. Jeff, go ahead.
Hey, thank you. Hey, Andy, nice to hear you. I had a question. So every job has its perks and kind of behind the scenes kind of neat things. What's something that you like, that's the most enjoyable part of your job? It's kind of a perk that, you know, it's not in the job description necessarily, but what's one of the like perks and one of the kind of the cool things that you get to do or see or be a part of?
Great question, Jeff. You know, there's several, you know, pinch your arm moments that you go through throughout the season. You know, one, like I was just talking about, when we go up and look at the finished product on a Saturday prior to a game. Another is just being on the sideline for games. We're down at monitoring field. I've got a writer report to the NFL pregame and postgame, so I'm on the sideline monitoring how the field plays throughout the game. So, you know, just being there that close to see how quick the game unfolds and how fast and powerful and talented those players are is really next level compared to even watching it from the front row. That, you know, there's been so many other unique opportunities. I've been able to go all around the world, you know, go to London and prepare a surface for a game we played over there. And, you know, I get to go to the Super Bowl every year. I'm on a small group of field managers that goes to the Super Bowl annually and helps prepare that surface for the game. So, you know, there's a lot of, like I said, unique pinch me defining moments where you're, you know, you definitely respect and understand the privilege that you have someday.
Have you gotten close to an ice bucket dunk at any time there, Andy?
One more time, Chris?
Have you gotten close to an ice bucket dunk at any time?
Yeah, occasionally. It's been pretty close. We tend to discourage those, but, you know, celebration. So, yeah, we're lucky enough to, you know, when we won the NFC West at home, you know, we're running around the field celebrating with the players. You know, that was a special moment that, you know, you're right in there in the thick of it, you know, running around, you know, jumping around celebrating with the players. So it's, again, one of those unique moments that we've had.
Do you feel that the players truly understand what your group does and how it affects the game or could affect the game?
Absolutely. The ones that are truly in tune with it understand, and they know, you know, at different times of the year the surface changes. We were on Bermuda grass most of the year, but then we overseed with the ryegrass later in the season. You know, just due to the fact that we play a majority of our season in the fall and the winter months, that we can't push a summer grass all the way through. So the really special guys throughout the years have noticed the change in the surface, and they do, you know, they reach out to me. You know, even though we spend a lot of time and energy communicating with coaching staff and our equipment staff on, you know, how the field and the practice fields change throughout the week and throughout the year. The really, really good ones will reach out to us on a regular basis and say, "Hey, isn't this the time of year when we start putting some ryegrass down?" You know, and they're always in front of it. You know, Larry Fitzgerald is a prime example of that, where he's, you know, always been in front of it, and he's always been perceptive, and he always asks the correct questions. So, you know, there's guys like that master every aspect of the game, including the surface.
That's good. I know you guys do an awful lot of work, and you know, you put your heart, not only your professionalism, but your heart into making it, because it's, you know, at the end of the day, it's the team that you're supporting, and you want a safe field. You want to make sure that it's safe. Whatever happens, I know we have a lot of questions sometimes from people on sprinkler systems and things, on the irrigation. Do football players trip over those things, or you carefully disguise those?
No, they're, you know, if we do it right, and there's no room not to, they're sunk down on the ground, and we cover them. We have a ritual every pregame where I mix a green sand mixed with a little bit of clippings that we take off the field from that morning, mix it about 50-50, and cover up those heads. So even if for some reason they have settled over the week or whatever the case, we'll make sure that you cannot feel it underfoot. And it's part of our audit that we go through with the NFL, that we check that, and it's one of the boxes that we check, where we make sure to cover our heads for the day. So you'd be hard pressed to find a sprinkler head during the game until we wash it out post game.
A lot of people ask that question. You know, like in baseball, you know, they sit there and rake the infield every couple of innings and things, you know, to smooth out the clay and such as that. But some people don't realize that that happens on a football field. You need to replace some things. Even in golf, they have golf heads that pop up, but there's like artificial turf on top of the head, but it pops up on the cover. And mm-hmm. So that protects the people playing golf. They don't get their little spikes caught in it and fall down. I did that when I was in college. I played sports, and I was running off the field, and I won't tell you how old I am, but we had spikes that were like about an inch long in plastic, and it caught on a sprinkler head, and I tripped and broke my ankle. And that was the end of my point.
big guy
running off the field. There's nobody near him, and all of a sudden, kalunk, right on the face. So I'll never forget that.
There's
that
absolutely
was
no room for anything like that at this level. And at that level, you know, should have been taken care of then. But I'm sorry that happened. But again, there's absolutely no room for something like that. And we understand that we've got nearly $500 million with that inventory running around the field on a given weekend. So, you know, that's definitely part of your thought process whenever you're filling those heads up. That, you know, that could be millions and millions of dollars of lost revenue.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, Rob, I got a couple of listener inquiries here. They want to know about the paint, you know, applying, removing, and all of that stuff, and what effect it has on the turf, natural turf, or artificial turf. Sorry, Rob, what were you going to say?
Okay.
No, it's a great question.
Yeah, so we paint every week, week to week, at the training facility. On both of those fields, both of those need to be painted, lines, numbers, and hash marks every single week, and then going into the games, depending on you know, whether we're a Cardinals game or the Fiesta Bowl, there's obviously a different paint scheme. But we start painting on a Friday, finish up on a Saturday night, and once the game's over, we immediately start doing our best to remove that. It's a turf latex based paint, but you know, obviously anything that you apply to that surface isn't going to be the very best for it. So as soon as we finish up the game on Sunday night, we'll take a light Toro Rako back over the field to remove a little bit of that paint, and we get some water to it on Monday morning to start washing it through. And then another aspect of that is we don't want the paint to cake up. So when we're painting the same lines and same numbers and same hash marks over the year, if we don't do our best to eliminate that paint falling in the game, you'll tend to see some paint buildup, and that's where you'll have to look at laying down some sod and replacing that field.
Good job. So Phoenix is as you said, this is an annual job, a year-round job. Phoenix has some very different weather, winter to summer. Even though you've got the mechanics to move in and move out the field, when it's not in use and it's not actually in the stadium and it's outside, is it in the sun?
Yeah, we're 100% sun, so that's a huge advantage for us. We don't have to a lot of stadiums deal with some shade issues throughout the year, you know, a scoreboard or a south end seating, to where typically the south end of some stadiums can a decline over the year as you get closer to the winter, and the sun starts to fall down a little bit. That's a huge advantage, to where we're 100% in the sun and we don't deal with any shade issues when we're outside.
What's another one of the big challenges of taking care of turf wet in where, 1 month you can be blistering heat and the other month you can get down into the 30s?
Well, I would say, even when we play in the summertime, I can bring the field in from 120 degrees outside, and due to the nature of our field, how it comes inside, for player safety and for fan comfort, we pre-cool that building to in the 60s. So I'll go from 120 degrees outside, and I'll bring it in on a Friday, and that field will be 64 degrees, depending on dew point and everything throughout the weekend. So, that's a challenge for us in itself. But like you mentioned, when we can go from 120 degrees to 30 degrees, we can't grow the same grass throughout the year. So we grow a Bermuda grass, which is our base throughout the entire season. But as we get into the heart of the football season, into November, December, January, we have to overseed it with a ryegrass. So now we have the challenge of playing on a Bermuda field that's overseeded with grass that was literally in a bag 2 weeks prior. So we don't, we don't have the luxury of that maturity to play on. So that's a bit of a challenge just due to the nature of the time of year we play in, knowing that grass is going to go dormant. So we need to keep some color and some grass on it.
Yeah, great answer. So, hey, listen, Andy, everybody in the industry now wears a conservation hat, right? So is water efficiency a part of your program at all there?
Absolutely. And, it should be part of everybody's program here in Arizona. This past summer was a big reminder of the lack of the monsoon that we had here, for everybody here to conserve and to be water-wise. And yeah, absolutely. From the Toro Sentinel system that we have to the flow sensors that we have in our main lines, to something that gets you know, overlook quite a bit that we put a lot of reliance on is, you know, just being out there and monitoring it. We have such a, you know, I've got 20 acres of turf at the stadium and all the landscape and trees and we're running hundreds of owls every day. So we make a point just to walk the property every single day. Somebody's on it every single day, whether that's, you know, our 24 hours a day security that we've got a relationship with if they see something, you know, or just me or one of my crew just putting a set of eyes on something every single day, you know, just, you know, from high tech to low tech, I think we've got it covered.
Awesome. Hey, if you don't mind, Andy, we've got a young man by the name of George on the line. He's got another question for you. George, are you there?
Yes. Hey, I saw that the 49ers played in Arizona this year. Was that especially challenging? I can't imagine having that many games out there. That would have been kind of some crazy time.
Yeah, George, you're right. It's just due to the COVID situation, the Niners kind of lost their home out there in Santa Clara. So our ownership was quick to put his hand up and say, you know, listen, we understand that this is bigger than just league or division rivals at this point. So they needed a place to go, and you know, we were a good fit for them. We had fan base field at the stadium, which I maintain that we ended up moving 6 weeks of their practices onto the fan base field at the stadium, as well as we played three of their scheduled games on the stadium field. So we took our already condensed end of the season schedule, which, you know, was already going to be a challenge, plus the Fiesta Bowl bowl game, and added three NFL games to it. But I think it went well. We were able to, you know, move a couple side dates around and, you know, to miss a couple nights of sleep. But, the big thing was, is, you know, we got to play every single game on the schedule throughout the league. We're the only league in the world that played every single one of their scheduled games this season. So that's something that we're really proud of, and we're proud to be a small part of that.
Just a quick irrigation question for you. We were talking about that earlier. So on this retractable field, are the heads mounted on that retractable and installed on those, or they're off the field to the sides of the field?
No, they're in the field just like you'd see on a normal football field. They're subsurface pop-up rotors, and really the only difference that we have is my main line. I've got a 4-inch main line, and once the field comes outside, I plug the main line in and plug the power cord in for solar power for the valves. Mm-hmm. Other than that, we're going to be nearly identical to any other football irrigation system.
What's the typical pressure you have coming in for that?
On my pump station, I can run it just about whatever. But typically running four valves at a time. What, 78, 70 per head?
Mm-hmm. Well, I got to tell you, just listening to you, I mean, it's an exciting thing that a lot of people have no idea what goes on to preparing a field and making everything work right, and saving water at the same time. I mean, it's just amazing. I can understand how proud you sound and as you presented your information to us. I can tell you really like what you're doing.
Absolutely love it. And that's part of what we do, is just not to be noticed. When nobody's talking about me on Monday, I think I did my job right.
Good sign. All right, Rob, I think we're just about up at the NBC News Hour here.
Yep. So, Andy, thank you very much for joining us on the show. We appreciate it, and our listeners definitely would appreciate it. And, again, we try to mix a lot of different kinds of subjects in with water, and I thought you know, you were recommended to us, and I thought this would be a great opportunity to hear what you guys do, and keep up the good work. I want to come see some games, and thanks again, and most importantly for you and your family, stay safe from COVID.
All right, likewise. Thanks for having me, guys. Go Cardinal.
Thanks for being on.
Yeah.
KCAA.